Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Mo Thugs movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'm gonna ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Thank you to Bone Thugs and Harmony on that. Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. We've got a hell of a show for you tonight. You know, this young lady's been on my show before, but she sure is a tremendous warrior moving forward, set for April 6th, Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship 5. Welcome to the program, Britton Hart. Britton, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Don. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited.
Oh, you know, I'm actually stoked for this card. You know, and the reason being is, for one, you know, bare knuckle boxing, let's face it, it's brand new to the sport. It's taken over. It's growing vastly, and it's a tremendous job done by Dave Feldman. But what I'm more impressed by are the cards that they're putting together. You know, and your fight April 6th, it has the sport buzzing. What are your thoughts going into April 6th? Against Christine Ferreira, because everybody right now is calling this probably one of the most highly anticipated fights on the card. So what are the thoughts of Britton Hart?
Well, you know, honestly, this is actually the first I'm hearing it, so it's kind of a shock. I've kind of tried to take a step and really focus and stay kind of away from social media and outside influence, because I do want to be so focused, and I'm very determined. So, I mean, that's amazing and kind of, I mean, a great honor for a card that has, you know, Artem Lobov and Jason Knight. Like, to me, I felt like that was just so exciting. Like, wow, I'm, you know, on a fight card with some really experienced and talented fighters. Like, that only has to set precedent on, you know, what's going to happen next. You know, we're getting fighters like Pauly going to be joining soon. But, you know, going back to my fight with Christine, I'm really excited because I feel like, I feel like it was circled around, hey, you know, whoever wins this gets the rematch at Beck. But I kind of didn't want to focus outside because I feel like that's a mistake looking for the fight after. So I've just really been focused on April 6th. When I found out that there was an American featherweight title up for grabs, I mean, you're talking about through the roof. Like, I mean, this is this opportunity. I felt like with the Beck fight, you know, that was really my opportunity to sit there and say, you know, this is who I am and I'm here to stay. And, you know, I get to have Jay Feldman. It's that pressure and that constant, you know, it's almost like a pull. Like I said, it's not like something I pushed for. I didn't beg for the Christine fight. I didn't ask. It was just kind of placed in front of me. And, you know, here's my opportunity. I have to grab it.
Truly is. You know, I know from a prior interview with you that, you know what you're fighting for. You know what aspects in your life truly drive you, and one of them being your children. Now with the title being, you know, the Southern Weight title being up for grabs, how much more emphasis does that put on it for Britton Hart?
It puts on a lot, to be honest with you, because, you know, I've just always strive to be a champion. And, you know, I never really came from a background with, you know, money or being in a popular city for fighting. And I always kind of had that in the back of my head. For anyone that ever noticed me or for me to be what I truly want, I have to beat a champion in order to be a champion, because money and time just isn't on my side right now. So, I mean, I want to win a belt and a title and a championship so bad, and I felt like it was just take so much money and time and effort to get there that now, you know, I'm just shocked that, wow, here's what I've been working for. The last, you know, 3 years, I've made some real sacrifices in terms of traveling and, you know, doing sleeping outside of my car. You know, I travel to Philly and stay in my car in Philly or go out to California just to get that kind of training that I need and to make sure, you know, I quit a really good job. You know, I had a master's degree and everyone was kind of salty with me for not trying to pursue a real career, when my heart was really, I really wanted to put it in the fighting, and in order to do that, I think you really have to focus and give it your 100, and, you know, so I try to teach my kids, you know, if you want something, and no matter who's against you and who says you can't, you keep doing it, and eventually, you know, there you go, you can. I mean, same thing with Dave Feldman, you know, people were saying bare knuckle wouldn't really do great and take off, and look, every fight gets bigger and better, for sure.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, a question I want to ask you, you know, and it's crazy because you look at the MMA world, you know, and they say, they still say, and it cracks me up, I've been here 23 years, and they still say the male aspects in its infancy. Well, where does that put WMMA? Then you look at bare knuckle boxing, and here the women are paving the road with the men at the same time. Yes, it's a 100-something-year-old sport, but we're in the new era aspect. When you look at it like that, you know, Britton, did you ever think that you'd look over your shoulder and realize that you were not, you know, somebody that is just jumping into an aspect, but you're an aspect that is helping create and pave the future of bare-knuckle boxing and the sport? What does that truly mean to you, not just as a warrior, but someone who takes pride in what they do?
I mean, just hearing it gave me goosebumps. I mean, it's an out of body feeling. It just doesn't feel like, I really have to take a step back and be like, wow, to hear those words. And, you know, when I hear and I ever doubt anything, people kind of bring that up or that kind of presents itself like, hey, you're doing this. Like, do you realize, like, that YouTube fight had, you know, 2 million views on it? It just, things, you know, things like that, that I'm like, I have to take a step back and be like, wow, that's me. And, you know, I realized that when, you know, the fight that I had, the first fight, you know, that, hey, I'm a pioneer for a sport that, you know, is taking off. And, you know, I can't even believe it. It's just one of those things that I just remember kind of having that starving artist complex and, you know, sleeping in my car and working and going to the gym and being up all night and waking up and running. I said, you know, this is going to pay off my dad. I know it is. And here it's like it's paying off. And just to see those results and hear them from other people, again, I really still don't think it's sunk in quite all the way yet, because it's, again, it's just an amazing, incredible feeling. It just seems like a dream.
Yeah. And, you know, you kind of mentioned something a little bit earlier. You know, you have your master's and something. Well, I have my master's in engineering science, and I walked away from a six-figure-a-year job to do this sport. And then you kind of mentioned something that really hit home with me about you staying in your car, because I remember the beginning of the tournament. I remember I interviewed Arnold Adams. You know, he was pretty much homeless. They were in their car. You know, didn't know what tomorrow was going to bring. But now you look at where he's at. He's a champion and also the first African-American ever to hold the John L. Sullivan belt. You know, so dreams are made from adversity. And you're proof of that, you know, and you're continuing to strive for greatness. I kind of want to talk about something we talked about a little bit before the show, and I'm transparent with my listeners and with the fighters. I'm a little dismayed. You know, because you had an opportunity to get a belt, but it was kind of taken away from you, or vice versa, you know, via split decision, and you let it go to the judges. You look at the scorecard, it was 47-48, 50, 45, 49, 45. And I got to tell you, and Dave Feldman, don't take this wrong, bro, but I have a feeling the judges kind of didn't get it right that night. In the heart of Britain Hart, how do you truly feel about, after reading the scorecards, what did it truly, you know, complex or put into your mind and thought?
You know, I felt honestly, and this is how, you know, I know what it looks like on TV, and obviously I watched the fight a trillion times to watch over and be like, wow, like, especially with that, the slip that may or may have not been knocked out, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the point is I remember the feeling in the ring. And I just remember thinking, you know, everyone was like, oh, she's going to come for you. She's out for blood. She's going to pressure you. And I remember sitting in there and waiting for her to do that. And she didn't, you know, I didn't, she made the first move and I was like, oh, you know, here it is. I was like, okay, she wants me to set the pace. So even though I wasn't in the center, I was where I wanted to be. I wanted to be on the outside. I wanted to have I wanted to outbox her. I didn't want to sit in there and brawl with her. I wanted to have the move in, you know, the Muhammad Ali kind of boxing style, you know, throw punches, get out, throw punches, get out, always be on the angle, always be moving on the outside. And I felt like I did exactly what I wanted to. You know, she didn't have me running. She didn't throw and then have me backing up. I was constantly circling because I wanted to. I think if you look at it, you know, I feel like as a judge, you can be on one or two ways. Like you can be quantitative, which is who threw the most punches and landed the most punches, or you can be qualitative, you know, who, you know, hey, I might have hit her 30 times, but she hit me one good time, so quality goes to her. And I feel that's like what it boiled down to. And it stinks because when you go qualitative, I think qualitative is more opinion-based, where quantitative is more factual-based. So I think that that's kind of what reflected in this fight. I think, you know, and it kind of shows the importance of, you know, what goes into judging aspects. You know, are we going to say who won the fight based on fact or who won based on opinion? Just like with skill. Are you going to say, you know, this fighter is better because they can do this, this, and that? Or is this better, you know, for a fighter because they did a whole, you know, a different array of skills? So I think everything should be kind of, you know, in order to be factual on who's the better fighter, it has to be measurable in some way. And it can't be left up to opinion because then there's bias that kind of ruins it. So, I mean, that's how I feel about it. I felt like, you know, I was the pace setter. I felt like, you know, when I wanted to go in, I did. And, you know, she was just kind of waiting for me to be the counterpuncher. And I just wasn't somebody who could just sit there and wait for her to make that first move, you know. So I felt like, you know, maybe if I would have done that and reversed that in my head and was like, okay, well, if you just want to sit there, I'll just sit here. And then I can counter you. I didn't do that. So in the long run, I guess, you know, she did land a few, you know, cleaner, nicer looking punches. And I think if I wouldn't have rushed in that one split 10 seconds, I feel like hands down, I won the fight. But that one time where I kind of rushed in on her and the slip took place, I feel like it really kind of got in the judge's head, you know, on the qualitative part.
I agree there. You know, with that being said, you know, April 6th, you know, it's a highly anticipated fight. A lot of people are, you know, catching the attention of you and Christine's fight. You know, with what we just discussed, to be quite honest with you, in the mind and the heart of, and it sounds kind of plural, but of Britain Hart, do you plan on letting it going to the judges this time, you know, this time? Because, you know, you've seen what happened last time. What are the thoughts of Britain Hart going into April 6th?
You know what, I would really love, and I think it's what the people want to hear, you know, and, I, you know, I'm going to be like you are, you know, transparent about it. And, you know, I feel like everybody wants to hear, oh, yeah, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to knock her out, or I'm going to show her, you know, that I'm not intimidated by, you know, all the bullying and the messages I've been receiving. You know, I'm not going to go in there and be, you know, that's not that's not me. I had a fight, and, you know, I wanted to make a statement, and I made it really, like, loud and clear that I was going to go in and knock this girl out in the first round. And you know what? When it didn't happen, I went in there, and I was so focused on the knockout that I think I forgot the reason why I was there. I forgot, you know, the sweet science of it. And the science is setting it up and kind of letting it come as, you know, as it does. So, I'm not going to have any predictions. I'm not going to say I'm going to knock her out in the third round, you know, or that, you know, I'm going to go in there and do what Bret Hart feels is best and needs to based on, you know, her experience with the last fight. And in moving now, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not worried about what she's doing or what her game plan is. And I just know that I'm going to go in there and do what I have to do. Whatever that, if it's a first round, if I need to have a first round knockout, if it presents itself, it's going to happen. If it's going to be a fourth round knockout, then it's going to happen. And if it goes to judges, best believe I'm going to make sure that I have both the nicer looking punches, and I'm definitely going to have the quantity. So, I mean, I got it covered on all aspects, and, you know, I'm ready for it.
I like that. You know, I truly like that. I've interviewed thousands of fighters, and I don't think I've, you know, quite, you know, heard it put that way. I like that. You know, it's better just to go in there, punch in your time card, and go to work and do what you got to do. Don't make any predictions because you might let yourself down. You know, I like that. You know, adversity happens in life, and triumph happens in life. What was it in your life, Britton, that allowed you to find this passion, allowed you to persevere and see the angle in life where you wanted to go, and what took you there?
Whew, I don't know if this show is ready for all that. But, I mean, man, I guess to summarize it, I've never been somebody that was given anything or had I've never been on the longer end of the stick, so to speak. I've always been on the short end of the stick, you know? And I grew up, you know, having to take care of myself, you know, and I kind of found myself in sports and playing outside a lot because, you know, that's what I had to do to have fun. But I realized, I packed my own lunches, I got myself ready, and I just remember, you know, being alone and being okay with that. Like, I was never one who had a lot of friends. You know, I was bullied and picked on. You know, I wore glasses. I had bangs. I mean, just all sorts of crazy stuff. And, you know, I was fine with it. When I grew up, you know, I ended up, I think, like you mentioned, I'm a mother. I ended up having a child really young. And, you know, everybody was kind of against me on that. And I just remember thinking, if I'm going to be somebody and make it, I have to go to college. These are the things I have to do. And I did them, you know, all by myself. And it's, you know, always been that kind of, you know, situation, no matter what. I just feel like in the end, you know, I really didn't have the support or anything that I needed, which I could want and complain about and be negative. Or I can sit there and say, hey, it made me to the point where I knew that I would have to do certain things in order to survive or be better or be the best person I could be. So where you talk to some girls, they're like, oh, I'm not sleeping in this hotel or motel because it has bugs in it. And I'm sitting here thinking, man, I would have a pillow and blanket in my car and just recline it and lay back just so I would be able to, you know, work and, you know, have the opportunity to work a really good job and both live in a city that was a few hours away. So those were all things that I was used to. I remember I stayed one place, and, you know, it was $150 rent, and the roof, it was raining one night and the roof was leaking. I had to get up and all I had was an air mattress, and I had to move the air mattress so the roof wouldn't leak on me. And I would get up, and then it would leak, and I would move the air mattress to another spot. And long story short, I ended up giving up on it and just putting the blanket over my head and waking up in the morning with, like, puddles everywhere. And I knew I had to go and take a shower, get dressed, and go to work and pretend like – and nobody – and you know what's crazy? I worked in this beautiful corporate suite I'm talking about. I mean, just – fancy offices. They had, you know, the ones that were cool enough to have the mini fridges with complimentary beverages. You know, and I would go and work. There'd be Ferraris parked outside. And here it is, you know, I just came from a house that was leaking, that had mold, and, you know, I slept on an air mattress with a blanket dropped over my head. Nobody would know, you know, nobody would be the wiser. So I feel like, you know, I've kind of kept that attitude up the whole entire time. Like, you know, and something in my life, like, no matter what the adversity is, you know, that, I keep going. I don't let it be a factor. I don't let it be a defining factor. People would only know these things if they asked me or sat down with me and actually asked the question. If not, you would have no clue on some of the things, you know, that I've been through. You know, I've seen, you know, somebody have full-out seizure and almost die in front of me and have to be, you know, carried in a bathtub and put in ice. I've lived through some pretty, you know, horrific incidents. I've been placed where someone shot themselves. And I mean, just moving forward, I don't think that people, you know, I don't ever really, you know, become vocal about it, because I'm not going to let it be something that defines me or what I'm doing with my life.
Man, that hits home with me, because, I mean, that's truly kind of how I was forced into military school at a very, very young age. And when I graduated early at 16, I kind of went back to California. Really didn't know my family, because I didn't live with them most of my life, and everybody was all, "Oh, you're just going to be a drug addict, you're a nobody, you're this, you're never going to amount to anything." And I think that's why I went back to school and got my degree in engineering, and then went on to master's in engineering science. And I wanted to prove to everybody, you know, that I can do. And here I turn around, and like I said earlier, I walk away from a six-figure job to step into boxing 23 years ago, and I don't know, I love this sport. There's something about this sport that just, it engages me, it allows me to be creative, it allows me to live. What is it about this sport that keeps Britt and Hart enthralled and keeps that passion alive?
You know, honestly, it's just one of those things that when I'm there, I just feel like I belong. Like, it's one of those places I've had, you know, places where people tell me probably my biggest weakness is I think too much or I overthink things. And, you know, boxing specifically, fighting, being in that atmosphere, it just allows me not to think on the real world. You know, even though you can put real world life situations in the ring and out of the ring. And I do try to apply that, you know, to be motivating to not only myself, but others. But honestly, it's just a place where I can forget that this happened. I can let go of what had happened. I don't have to worry about bills or, you know, if, you know, I need to mow the grass. I'm just in there. You know, I have to do straight punches on the heavy bag. That's my biggest, like, that's my concern and biggest worry, is that, oh, I have to do 12 rounds on the bag, which really, you know, is really not that bad when you look at it. And I like that aspect of it. I work with kids almost in every boxing gym that I've been with, and I can literally see the admiration in their eyes and just, you know, how they look up to, you know, to me and the other people that are more advanced and older. And it's kind of that feeling that I can't give up. It's the one place that I know I can't let people down, but I don't want to give up. Not, you know, for me, but for others, you know, for my kids, for, you know, you have no idea. I had a mom and a daughter. It's the same thing. She, you know, she said something to me. I was in the boxing gym. I've seen them like maybe like 4 or 5 times now. Her daughter loves me. And she shared with me, you know, they are on their anniversary of their 5 year. Her daughter died 5 years ago, as you know, when she was very young, taken way too long. And it just puts you in perspective. You don't have any idea what other people are going through, the battles that they're facing and what's inside of them. But we're all in a common place. We're all on equal levels. You know, I'm no different than this, you know, 10-year-old girl who looks up to me, or this, you know, 45-year-old mom who brings her daughter in and sees everyone else's, and now she signed up to do personal lessons so she can box. I mean, that's really what keeps me here. That's really what makes sleeping in my car worth it, and me fighting and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to be on TV fighting for a belt. I get to look at them and say that, and they know that, hey, maybe that can be them one day, and that, you know, those things, those defining factors that we talk about that are all in the past don't have to be, you know, what we make. You know, it's only what you choose to make them. And that's kind of the place where I feel like that's why I belong, because going to an office making six figures, me sitting in a desk across from the other person, I can almost 98% guarantee they haven't been through what I've been. You know, they haven't, they don't have the same struggle. They do have struggles. I feel like everybody struggles, but it's not the same struggle, you know, where in a boxing gym and you know, most of the time in the fighting world aspect, you know, the person next to you has gone through some stuff, and that's the reason why we keep fighting. We're fighters and we're survivors. And I feel like that sets us apart from other people.
That's so true. You know, I look at things like we talked about my car wreck before we went live, and, you know, I could have sat here and had a pity party, but I realized a long time ago that no matter how bad I got it, others have it worse. And I'm grateful for where I'm at. You know, I'm going to ask you one more quick question, Britton, and then we'll let you get to your sponsors and things. But if you had to surmise a reflective thought about April 6th and all the adversity and triumphs and everything that it's taken you to get there, what would that statement be?
I feel like the best statement, in the way I can describe it, is when they say, you know, they knock you down 8 times, I'm going to stand up 9. You know, and I feel like this is it. You know, I've been knocked down and I get back up. I've been knocked down and get back up. And I'm to the point where, you know, I can only get knocked down so many times before I'm going to stand up and stay up. And that's really what I'm here to say. I didn't give up, and I'm not giving up. But I feel like, you know, you fail tests, you take it again. Guess what? You're going to be better than when you were before. And I just feel like that's the opportunity. That's what's about to happen. That's what I can feel, you know, transducing in my heart and my mind, is that, you know, I've gotten knocked down before. This is me getting up, and this is me. This is my time to stay up and pass the test, to sit there and say, I won that title, that championship. I won that dream that I've been working so hard for.
I like that. If you had to make a statement to Dave Feldman, Nate Shook, and all the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships staff and promotion about giving you this opportunity, what would that statement be?
100% thanks for believing in me. I mean, it's that simple. They believed in me. I know they did. I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but, you know, they – yeah, thanks for believing in me. I know they believed in me, and I can just remember from the very first time I spoke to them about this, they believed in me, and I can't thank them enough for making me believe in myself.
I like that. I really do. You know, it's always a tremendous honor for me to have you on the show. This is the second time. You know, you're in there with them. I mean, you're right there in the beginning of this new creation of an old sport. You know, you're getting written into the history books, not only creating the legacy, but you're demonstrating in life to people, when you see something that you want to do and you set a goal, you see it through. And that's what I see in you, Britton. You truly are a tremendous warrior that is seeing your dream through, you know, through all the adversity and triumphs. I believe you're going to make it happen, my friend. Thank you again for honoring my show. I'm going to toss the mic to you. If you have any sponsors, friends or family, social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program, my friend, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, thank you, Don. That means a tremendous amount to me. I mean, definitely thank you for taking the time to speak to me and just kind of, you know, believe in me as well, and everything that you had to say. It's really one of those things I'm going to walk away from this conversation and show tonight and know that, you know, this is what I'm here for. This is why I'm here, and this is what I'm going for. So keeping it short on the thank yous, kind of have a whole collaborative of people I do want to thank, but they know who they are. That's what kind of makes it special. The people that are involved in the makings of, you know, this fight happen and what's going to happen, they definitely know who they are. And a huge thank you to them. Thank you for each and every person that, you know, shows me any kind of thank you, support, you know, you go, girl. It really all means the world to me. It means a lot. They take time out of their day to say that and congratulate me. I want to thank each and every person that believes in me. So thank you again. And, you know, hope the show wasn't, you know, like you said, we're supposed to be warriors and fighters. Hope it wasn't too sentimental and personal, but it was really a great honor to be able to speak about it with you.
Oh, I'm truly humble. Hey, you know, the thing of it is I could do a Wikipedia or Tapology show, but I mean, it's just you're sharing everything that everybody already knows. You got to let the fighters speak. You know, I created this platform for you guys, you know, so you can come on and share a little bit about your life, your struggles, and let people know that you're just people too. You know, we're not all superheroes. And, you know, people take aspects of social media sometimes too in-depth. And that's why I like this platform, because you're able to come on and show the world who Bret Hart is. And like you said, there's a lot of aspects of you that nobody would know unless they ask you. With that being said, thank you for humbling my listeners and my show. It's an honor. I can't wait to get you back on, and we'll rock it all over again, my friend.
Great. Took the words out of my mouth. Can't wait to speak to you again.
All right. Well, you have a good night, my friend. I wish you the best of luck come April 6th. Do your thing, girl.
Thank you. Bye.
All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Bret Hart set to face Christine Ferreira April 6th, Biloxi, Mississippi. I suggest you order it now on bareknuckle.tv or get your tickets. It's going to be a hell of a card, man. I've already interviewed, you know, probably a third of them. Got quite a few more to go. We're going to give Jason Knight a call right now. Because we double confirmed.
Hello,
Jason. This is Don McGuire with the Fighter's Voice. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. How about you?
Oh, no complaints. No complaints. Loving the weather, loving life, man. You got a tremendous fight coming up, brother. You know, my show's. I'm going to explain a little bit about my show. It's not a Wikipedia or Tapology. So I know you're a UFC veteran. I know you're used to them 2-hour media scrums and. You're not going to get that here, homie. I can guarantee you that. You're going to get a humble, good interview. You know, with that being said, you know, I've interviewed everybody from the other promotions and all of the promotions. You know, what does it mean for Jason Knight to transition from the MMA aspect to the bare knuckle aspect?
Man. For me, it's just, you know, this is just about fun, you know, it's something to keep me busy in the, you know, in the meantime. Of course, my goal is to, you know, get back in the top, into a top MMA promotion, you know, whether it's UFC or 1FC or whatever, you know, that's my ultimate goal. But, you know, bare knuckles, you know, it's going to keep me busy, and, you know, I think it's going to be something that's fun to do. And, you know, I'm kind of excited about it because, you know, all I have to do is just train nothing but boxing. You know, I don't have to worry about all the different aspects of mixed martial arts. So I think that I'm making a lot of improvements with my boxing, and, you know, I'm ready to go out here and show the world.
Oh, most definitely. So kind of in a weird essence, you're trying to look, you know, look into bare knuckle just basically to create a new aspect of you, but to add a more defined warrior and open to all aspects in the future. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, for sure, man. My thing is, you know, I'm working on the holes that are in my game, and, you know, what better way to start than boxing? You know, I definitely need to work on my hip movement, work on my footwork, and you know, I've been putting in a lot of work there, working on keeping my hands up, stuff like that. And you know, that's one big hole in my game that I've wanted to close for a long time. And you know, now that I've slowed down, and you know, I'm working on just one particular thing, I feel like my stand-up's getting a whole lot better. And you know, next I'm going to move into trying to work on getting my black belt and try to, you know, work on getting my wrestling a lot better, my takedown defense and my takedown offense. So that way, whenever I am ready to, you know, return to the octagon, that, you know, I'm 100% prepared to go out there and get my hand raised.
Most definitely. You know, like I told you, ma'am, they call me the Barbara Walters of MMA, so, you know, from Daniel Cormier on down. So you're going to get some pretty awkward questions, but just roll with it, brother. Trust me, there's no detriment to my show. What was it early on in life for Jason Knight that made you realize that this was a path that you wanted to follow? What aspect of, you know, you as a young man made you fall in love with the sport and furthermore follow that path?
Man, for me, really, as long as I can remember, you know, I grew up street fighting. You know, my big brother, he had me tough as hell, you know, pretty much since I come out the womb. You know, I can't remember a time where, you know, I was ever really scared to fight anyone, or, you know, I can't ever remember a time where, you know, that I backed down from, you know, someone trying to, you know, pick on me or something like that. I made sure that I always, you know, I always fought no matter what, you know, I always stood my ground. And, you know, after a while, you know, once I got a little bit older, you can't just beat people up and get away with it no more. You know, around 12, 13, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, around that age, I was getting in a lot of trouble for, you know, some kid would say something smart ass or something, or something out of the way, and I would just, you know, beat the snot out of him. And, you know, next thing you know, I'm getting simple assault charges pressed, and they're threatening me with juvie and stuff like that. And then next thing you know, I find out about MMA. I start, you know, slowly but surely training for mixed martial arts. I have my first fight, and, you know, hey, this is a way that I can do something that I love. I can let out all this pent-up frustration and not get in a bit of trouble. And, you know, after that, man, you know, once I had that first fight, there was really no more interest in street fighting anymore, really. You know, it's like, you know, why would I do that? You know, that's going to jeopardize me being able to get in here and do it in front of everybody. You know, if I go out there and fight in the streets, I might break my hand or something like that. And you might get hurt and not be able to fight the fight that I was planning on, you know, that I've been training my ass off for. You know, why would I sacrifice that for a fight outside the gym that gives me no glory whatsoever, you know?
Right. Hey, you kind of killed two birds with one stone, man. You got to keep it southern and got paid for it.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
I love that. You know, I look at this fight that's, you know, coming up April 6th with Artem. It's a tremendous opportunity for you, brother, in more ways than one. You know, you're going in there against a tremendous UFC veteran, a tremendous warrior in himself. What would it truly mean to Jason Knight to come out victorious? Because, like you said, you know, you're trying to add a new dimension, but you're trying to diversify yourself. You go in there and you come out with a win over Artem, you're truly going to set a precedence. So what does April 6th truly mean to Jason the Kid Knight?
Man, to me, April 6th, you know, it's truly about going out there and getting back to my roots and having fun. And I got in this career because it was, like I said, I was just a badass kid who loved to fight. And, you know, somewhere along the lines in my MMA career, you know, I kind of got sidetracked a little bit and got a little bit too much worried about the money. And, you know, I wasn't fighting for fun anymore. But I'm going to go out here and I'm going to have a blast fighting Artem Lobov, man. I'm so pumped up about this fight. I can't think about fighting this guy without my adrenaline rushing and, you know, just ready to get in there and, you know, and put on a display of some skills, you know, for everybody to see. And, you know, I believe that like career defining, this would be my career defining moment, because this has got to be the most important fight of my career. Not because it's Artem Lobov, because, you know, I fought Ricardo Lamas. That should have been the most important fight of my career. But at this point in time, you know, this is the last time that all eyes are going to be on Jason. You know what I'm saying? If I go out here and I get my ass kicked and Artem makes me look like a fool, then, you know, they're pretty much not going to be interested in what I do next. But if I go out here and I tool Artem and I dance around him, I make him look stupid, and, you know, I cut his face up and I make him quit the fight, then, you know, I might have people talking about me.
Oh, you're definitely going to have people talking about you either way. But, I mean, you go out there and come out with a victory that night, you're truly going to have the sport in a buzz. You know, sometimes we've got to ask some elephant in the room questions, and I hope you don't mind. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to, sir. And it's not any dramatic question or anything like that. You know, I look at your fight with Chaz Kelly, and you came out victorious that night. And then you kind of had some bumps in the road. How hard has it been for you, Jason, to find where you needed to be? And do you believe that this path into bare knuckle is going to show the world that redefined that second chapter of Jason Knight?
Man, really, to be honest with you, man, what it took for me to kind of get back on track, to get my mind back right, you know, I had to get outside of that struggle. You know, like I got to where, you know, I had all that money in the bank at one time, and I was so used to it, so I was trying to live my life like that money was never going to go away. And then when it went away, it was hard for a while. You know, I had to figure it out. I had to figure out how to get back on my feet. I had to figure out how to get back on my feet without the, you know, the UFC, without the fighting to help me out. And, you know, I've got that figured out. I've got my little gym going, and, you know, I'm able to pay my bills without fighting at all. And, you know, and it's still doing something that I love. I'm not having to go to the shipyard. I'm not having to go build houses. You know, I've got peace of mind now. I went through a pretty rough divorce. You know, it all started right before my last fight, and you know, I think that played a little bit of part in the mental aspect of things. But, man, I've got all that behind me. You know, I've got all the stress out of my life, and, man, I'm so eager to just go out here and fight this fight, and, you know, move around in ways that people have never seen me move before. Keep my hands up in ways that people have never seen me keep my hands up. Like, move my head, move my feet, and just go out there and put on a display of some real skill that, you know, nobody's ever seen from me before. So I'm really excited, man.
I'm excited for you, bro. I mean, I've been a fan of yours for quite a while now, and it's quite an honor, actually, to have you on my show. You know, but you look at the aspects of MMA. You know, it's a little more slower pace, a little bit more set back. You jump up into bare knuckle. You got 5 2-minute rounds. What has Jason Knight done to prepare himself for this new aspect, this divine road that you've never walked before?
Man, to be honest with you, whenever I first took this fight, I was thinking, man, you know, it's 5 2-minute rounds. I could do that shit holding my breath. You know, then 2-minute rounds, what are you talking about? And they give me a minute in between? Oh, that shit's going to be easy. And I went in there, went to a real boxing gym, and I had this little 135-pound black kid named Debo that come in there and threw 300 punches, it seemed like, in 2 minutes. And I did everything I could to try and keep up with him. And after two-minute rounds, I was gassed. And I'm like, man, how in the fuck? Like, I can go 5 5-minute rounds of sparring MMA and be all right. But I just did two-minute rounds with this little guy, and he just wore my ass out. And then, you know, since then, I have been putting in so much work, man. I've been sparring so many rounds. I've been hitting pads so many rounds. I've been, you know, putting in my drills. I've been doing everything that, you know, that I can think of to do, everything that my coach tells me he wants me doing, I'm putting it in. You know, I'm doing everything I can. And, you know, I went from being able to do 2 two-minute rounds to, you know, now I can do 10 two-minute rounds and still never breathe hard. So I feel like if I go out here and just give it everything I've got, then, you know, I'm never going to get tired no matter what. I'm going to go out here and be able to breathe through these 5 rounds. And, you know, whether he's coming forward or he's going backwards, I'm going to be right there with him.
Yeah, I like that, you know, because it's everybody thinks the same, you know, because I interviewed Johnny Hendricks when he was getting in there with the fighting Bare Knuckle Fighting Federation, that promotion that screwed everybody over and didn't pay him. And, you know, a lot of these guys took that, you know, oh, well, it's not going to be any different. Well, you found out it truly is. It's, you know, it's such a fast-paced aspect of it. You know, I think you'll fit right in, though, man. But what did it mean for you, for Dave Feldman, to pick up that phone and give Jason Knight a call? Did you feel like you were given that second chapter to your life, that second opportunity that you were looking so hard for?
Man, not 100%. You know, I mean, I feel like David has given me an awesome opportunity, given me an awesome platform, and I can't thank him enough for that. But you know, I do not feel like, you know, that was by far my only opportunity. You know, the only opportunity that was going to come my way. I feel like, you know, I still had other options, but you know, I believe that this is a great first step into, you know, making my road back to where I want to be. I believe that, you know, if I go out here and I fight Artem and get this big win, you know, it's going to get a lot of people talking. And, you know, I think that bare knuckle, it could possibly be something that I like. You know, it could be something that, you know, I want to stick with. So you never really know. Right as of right now, it's just a one fight deal. But afterwards, you know, if I like it, I might try and talk them into, you know, give me one of them 3-5 deals, you know?
Most definitely. Well, you know, it's cool that you said that, because I had interviewed Chris Liebman that's a tremendous brother of mine in life, and he fought for that fraudulent promotion. And when he got an opportunity, because he's going to be fighting on the same card as you, you know, he loved it, man. It's reinvigorating for him. So it could be the same aspect for you. You can go in there and you could love it more than you ever did the UFC. You could find a home, you know, like you said. That's what's great about this sport. You know, you've already created a legacy through all the aspects you've done in MMA and everything else in life. But now you're creating a foundation for an old sport. You know, you're being written into the history books, especially if you beat Artem. You're truly going to be written into the history books. In all aspects, what does it mean to you knowing that you've already created such a tremendous legacy, but now you're being cemented into history through Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships?
I think it's going to be awesome. The way that I see the bare knuckle sport growing, you know, I mean, the way that it seems like it's going to take off, and the work that David Thielman's putting in, you know, I can't see the promotion doing nothing but great. And, you know, it's awesome that I get to be a part of it. I'm not making no promises that I'm going to fall in love with it and I'm going to stick with it forever. But at the same time, I'm not promising you that I won't, because, I mean, this all started as a kid street fighting with bare knuckles back in the day, you know, and, I mean, it might feel good. I hadn't hit somebody with bare knuckles in a while.
It might take me back to the old days.
I might take me back to middle school or some shit, you know?
Yeah, I remember them days, bro. I'm 53. I know you're not nowhere near my age, but, man, I miss the days when we had a problem with somebody. We'd go out back behind the school building or the store, and we knuckle it up. Then we'd go have dinner with each other or spend the night at each other's house, man.
You look right on there, shake hands afterwards, man. That's the way it's supposed to be, dude. But now,
you know, it's sad how times have changed, you know. You know, April 6th, we've already talked about in so many aspects, but if you had to make a statement to the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships Nation, the fans, because it is one of the fastest growing sports in the industry, I mean, aspects in the industry right now, what kind of statement would you make to the fans about what they can expect from Jason Knight come April 6th?
Man, I've got a lot of fans out there, a whole lot of fans that they've been nothing but true supporters, and you know, I can't thank y'all enough. No matter what, Jason Knight fans have never wavered. You know, you got the Fly By Night fans who you know might have supported me when I was on my little win streak, and then they fell off. But the true fans, you've always been there, and I thank y'all so much for that. On April the 6th, this is the fight that y'all have been waiting, you know, for a while to see. This is the performance that you've been looking for, you know, for Jason Knight to put on. I promise you, if you watch April the 6th, if you're there in person, if you watch on TV, however you watch, April the 6th, man, you're gonna be delighted, because I'm going out there and I'm putting on a hell of a show. I promise you, I'm going to go out here, and I'm going to put hands all over this guy's face, and I'm coming out with my hand raised. There's, you know, it's win or die, and I'm not planning on dying on April the 6th.
You know, you made some of the kind of, this is where I get Barbara Walters a little bit. You know, you said, you know, the Jason Knight fans, the ones that truly have been there, will still always be there. Bro, you have one of the best records, you know, in MMA. You know, you're sitting at 20-6. You know, so if my listeners, you don't know him very much, I suggest you go and look. He's a tremendous young man and warrior. You know, this is just a different aspect that you're adding to yourself. You know, Jason, when you sit back and you have that reflective thought about the road you traveled and the path you're on now, how much more has it defined you as a man? As you mentioned earlier, you've got your own gym. You're self-sufficient. You've got kids. You've got aspects of life that are already taken care of. What does this aspect and the road to it, how has it defined you and made you grow, not just as a warrior, but as a man?
Man, I mean, it's been a hard-ass path, dude. I started this when I was 14 years old. You know, and by the time I had my first kid, I was 17. I had already went for, I don't know, I got my baby mama pregnant at 17, right? So I had my first kid right around 18. But by this time, I had already turned pro, and the dream was so alive. You know what I'm saying? The dream was so alive that I had to keep chasing it. You know what I'm saying? And you know how hard it is to be a 18, 19-year-old kid trying to, you know, work at the shipyard or go build houses or whatever, and you get off work, go straight to the gym, get off the gym, come straight home from the gym, and you take care of a baby, you know, who screams and cries all night and stuff, and then you get up, you go to work, you do it again, you go to the gym, you know, as soon as work's over with. You know, it was such a grind, it was such a struggle, man. And like I always knew, no matter what, you know, no matter what anybody told me, no matter how hard it got, no matter, you know, how many times that I had to, you know, struggle my ass off until that fight came, it was fine. You know, I didn't care, because I knew in my heart that this is what I was born for, and you know, that's still there. That dream is still very much alive. This is what I was born to do. You know, so I was born to be a fighter. You know, whether it's in MMA, it's bare knuckle boxing, it's jiu-jitsu, whatever, I was born to compete. And you know, I'm gonna go down a legend, I can promise you that. No matter what, before I die, I will be submitted, you know, in history books for the rest of all time. There, whenever they say the kid or they say Jason Knight, they're gonna think about me. They're not gonna think about some other guy. And you know, that's what it is to me. I feel like this is the next step. This is the next chapter. You know, it's just, you know, one page, you know, one little chapter of the story that I'm nowhere near done writing, you know.
Yeah, you're just creating a new chapter, brother, creating a new chapter. You know, I love the way you put that, too, because you remind me a lot of the way Kung Lee expresses himself, you know. So I'm going to ask you a question that I asked him, because I think it's I think you're a great candidate to ask this question. And I don't ask many that come on my show except for a select few, but what does pride, passion, and perseverance truly mean to Jason Knight?
Pride, passion, and perseverance. Man, pride, my pride to me is like, I want to be known as somebody, you know. I want the world to remember me. I want the world to, you know, to look back at Jason and just like, man, that guy right there, he was truly one of the best. He was one of my favorite to ever watch. And you know that just knowing that I've got some fans out there that are like that gives me so much pride, so much joy. You know, just knowing that I've got people out there that think that I'm one of those guys. I'm a, you know, I've got people that look at me like I look at Donald Cerrone and like I look at Uriah Faber. And man, if I can just keep that going, that gives me so much pride. And like you said, perseverance. I have to persevere. I have to keep going. You know, no matter what. You know, I've lost four. I got the number 15 in the world. I lost four in a row. And right now I'm kind of at the bottom. You know, I'm, you know what I'm saying? Like, kind of, I guess you could say down in the dumps. Well, I'm not, but like in my career, I guess you could say that, but I'm nowhere near done. So I'm going to persevere. I'm going to make it through it. You said pride, perseverance. And what was the other one?
Pride, passion, and perseverance.
Passion, man. I mean, the passion inside of me, you can't burn it out. There's a burning passion in me that you can't put it out no matter what. You know what I'm saying? And I might get a little tired every now and then. I might get a little, you know, frustrated. You know, my mind might get a little sidetracked and stuff like that. But always, the dream's always going to be alive, you know, no matter what. And I believe that, you know, no matter what, we gotta make it happen. And that's what I'm going to do until the day that I'm dead, or until I just can't do it anymore. I'm gonna push myself to the limit, trying to, you know, be the better man, trying to become, you know, the better version of myself. You know, try to learn. Always learn everything that I can, and you know, just keep improving.
Yeah, you got a long road ahead of you, bro. You look at Dan Severn, you know, and it's funny because he lied to the UFC when he initially got in, because I interviewed Dan, and it even caught me off guard. He was 40 years old, but he told him he was in his 30s, and that man went on to beat some of the greatest legends that ever existed in the sport after the age of 40. You know, you're only defined by your age if you let yourself be defined by your age. You know, Jason, I believe you got a long, tremendous career ahead of you. You know, what you're going to bring to bare knuckle and whatever path you find after bare knuckle, whether you stay there or you go back to the UFC or whatever path you take, I think you're going to define that aspect even more in your life. You know, if you had to make a statement, you know, I know you don't talk shit, bro, but if you had to make a statement to Artem or to the fans of Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships about what they're going to get out of Jason Knight April 6th and what type of mentality you're going to bring to the fans, what would that statement be, brother?
My statement is, I guess, Artem, you better be ready to die for this, because I promise you I am. I'm coming in there, and I'm going to put my heart on the line. And you got to beat me in front of my hometown crowd. You got to beat me in front of my fans. You got to beat me while they're cheering my name. You got to beat me while I'm electrified because they've got me there. You know what I'm saying? You got to beat me while I'm on that next level, and I don't think you're ready for that. You know what I'm saying? You don't really know what you're stepping in there with until you get there. But I'll see you on April 6th, and I hope to God that you're ready, because we're just going to put on some fireworks.
Oh, man, I love it. You know, this is a tremendous card. You know, I got a couple friends fighting on this card, too. I've interviewed every card that they've done thus far. You know, and, man, you know, it reminds me of when the first card came out and the tournament evolved, and a lot of people were saying the brutality of the sport, it's this, it's that. So I took to a live feed with Jacob Stitch Duran, who happens to be contracted with Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships, but he's also a brother of mine from the UFC and Bellator and Invicta. And we did this live because we wanted the sport to realize that this is probably one of the most safest aspects that there is when it comes to the sport. And, you know, me and Stitch, we did this live feed, and he projected then that bare knuckle fighting would be the top of the sport within the next year, and has truly proven to be that. You know, with the opportunity that Dave Feldman and Nate Shook and all the others at Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships have given you, you know, Jason, I believe you're going to make the best of it. I believe you're going to show the world who the kid truly is. And, man, I can't wait for April 6th, to be honest with you, brother. You know, I seen an interview that you did with Artem. You know, there was a lot of camaraderie. But, you know, with MMA, everybody's brothers until the cage door locks. What is it, on this final question, what is it that allows Jason Knight to flick that switch come fight night?
Nah, man, what? Whenever they open that curtain or whatever, they tell me to walk out. I just go to a different place. I get in like tunnel vision, man. It's weird. It's like there's nobody there but me and Artem. There's nobody. You know, there's nothing. I barely hear my corner man, and it's like I'm in a tunnel, and I can't shut it off until the adrenaline stops. You know, and I can't explain it, but it happens naturally. As soon as it's go time, baby, the adrenaline starts pumping, and I get in there, and you know, I try to stay as calm as I can, but I'm really fucking going crazy inside and ready to go.
I love it. You know, I think one of the most things I took away from this interview tonight, brother, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, is that you're showing your children that whenever you set your mind to doing something, you see it through. Whatever path it is, you have truly taken that to heart. You truly take that mentality that, you know, you got to see things through, and you're showing your kids. What does it mean to you to be able to have this type of aspect, share it in your gym, share it in life? And who instilled that aspect into you, my friend?
Man, my mom, the only person I can think of that, you know, that I got that aspect from had to be my mom. I've never seen someone struggle so much their whole life, man. I mean, she pretty much raised four kids by herself. You know, my stepdad come along when we was like six, but you know, he was just a stepdad, you know, of course. But, I've never seen a lady struggle so much and fight her ass off so hard to try to make a better way for her kids. And, you know, all our life, dude, it's always been fucking one thing after the other. You know, since I was born, as long as I can remember, dude, you can't have the rain. I mean, you can't have sunshine without the rain. You know what I'm saying? Like, we never once just had it easy our whole life. It's always been a struggle, and no matter what, my mama, that woman, she always stuck right there. She had to work two jobs and, you know, figure it the fuck out. She figured it out. And, you know, that's just a, you know, I think that I can't thank nobody but her for that. And it means so much to me just to know that I get to pass that down to my kids, because, I mean, that's just who we are. That's who my whole family is. If there's something we want in this life, we don't sit around and hope that somebody gives it to us. We go and get it, man. I've never had anything given to me. Nothing. You know what I'm saying? Every vehicle I ever bought, I bought it myself. My mom and dad couldn't afford to buy it for me. You know, I didn't have a four-wheeler. I didn't have toys until I made it to the UFC, dude. I never had a four-wheeler. I never had anything that I really wanted until I made it to the UFC, because it's not because my mom didn't want to give it to me, it's because she couldn't afford to. But you best believe it, I had food in my mouth and I had clothes on my back. You know what I'm saying? And I just want my kids to see that, you know, you got to work hard for what you get. And I'm never, no matter how much money I get, no matter if I'm a millionaire one day, my kids will never just have shit handed to them. Never. They're going to work hard for everything that they get, and they're going to appreciate it whenever they get it. And, you know, I believe that that's the problem with this fucking world today, is you got too many people getting handouts, too many pampered-ass kids that expect too much when they get older. And, you know, I'm going to make damn sure that my kids aren't those kids.
Well, I commend you on that, brother, because, yeah, this millennial generation is something else, man. Like I said, I'm 53 years old, and, you know, before I hand you the mic and let you get your sponsors, I'm going to tell us one quick story. I was on a show, and I was talking to Charles Rockstar Rodriguez. He was getting ready to fight, you know, in glory. And I was preaching to him about the good old days. And I realized that this is something that he'll never see. He'll never know. He'll never understand because he's young. And it kind of made me take a step back in life and look at everything that I've been through at 53. And it made me realize exactly what you just said. You know, you got to appreciate life for what it is. And times have changed, and they're no longer that way. You know, I look at life as all I got is my word and my balls, and that really don't even matter anything in this world anymore. You know, and it's sad. It's sad to say that there's so much hate and anger and animosity, you know, going on in today's society because everybody feels so entitled. So it's refreshing to have a young man like you come on my show and share who you are and share your thoughts. And man, I took a lot away from this show, man. You really are the real deal, man. I can't wait for April 6th for you to shine, brother. You know, go out there and show the world. Show them who the kid truly is. With that being said, like I said before, I'm truly honored and humbled you joined the show. I'm going to pass the mic to you if you have any sponsors, friends or family, social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program. The floor is yours, brother.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on the show for sure. Hopefully, after I go out there, get my hand raised, you get me back on the show, talk about the victory. I want to thank a few sponsors real quick. Comfort on the Coast, that's one of my newest sponsors. They just hooked me up the other day. Thank y'all so much. My Nerdy Neighbor, man, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't even be talking to you right now. My phone crapped out on me. And, you know, they're the best tech guys in the business. They had my phone back together in no time. But thank y'all so much. The guys down at Performance Auto Upholstery, thank y'all. Empire FC. I feel like I'm leaving somebody out, but, you know, everybody who's helping me, man, thank y'all so much. I really couldn't do it without you. Blake Singley, that's the guy who's been working with me on my striking, on my boxing. Thank you so much, Blake, man. I'm telling you, we're going to go out here, we're going to smash this dude's face in, and I'm going to be so proud to share that with you, and thank you so much for getting me there. I can't wait to go out there and make you proud. All my fans, my friends, my family, thank y'all so much for the support. I love y'all, and I cannot wait to give y'all the fight that you've been waiting for. And, you know, Artem Lobov, I just want to thank you for the opportunity, and, you know, come ready, buddy. Because I promise you, I'm coming.
Almost definitely. Hey, Jason, before I let you go, where can my listeners find you on social media?
If you're on Twitter, it's at JasonTheKid23. Instagram, it's at JTKTheKid. Snapchat, at JTKTheKid. Facebook, you have JasonTheKidKnight is my fan page. Jason Knight is my regular page. But you try to, you know, follow me on my regular page. I can't accept any friends requests. I got too many. Also, I've opened up my own gym in Lewiston, Mississippi. It's called Jason Knight MMA. Go on there, check out the Jason Knight MMA Facebook page. Give us a like, give us a follow. And, man, if you ever want to come in for a training session, come check us out and sign your waiver, get your free class.
No, brother, it was truly an honor and a privilege to have you on the show tonight. Thank you to Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships for giving me the aspects of being able to interview their fighters. I truly appreciate that. Jason, you're a warrior. Man, go out there and do your thing April 6th. Show the world that the kid is back and ready to rock, man. I'm proud of you for overcoming what you have in life and showing the world that you're ready to come back and shine. Come back and be that star, baby. Do your thing April 6th. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to have you back on the show, brother.
All right, brother. Thank you so much. And I'll be looking forward to the call about the victory.
Oh, most definitely. All right, brother. You keep it southern. Have a great night. And with that being said, thank you for joining the program.
All right, brother. You have a good one.
All right. God bless, bro. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jason the Kid Knight. Truly a humble young man. That's one thing I love about my platform. You get to know the fighter, plus you get to learn about the fight. You know, I don't necessarily like the Wikipedia or Tapology shows because you can go on the internet and find that crap. If you want to hear the real fighter's voice, the true fighter's voice, then listen to the Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire. I want to thank Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships for allowing me to interview their fighters. You know, it's a tremendous opportunity to meet. I can't even speak tonight. Opportunity for me, considering this is an old aspect of the sport, but in a new era, being redefined under Dave Feldman, Nate Shook, and all of the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships family. I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez, Bite Me Mouthguards with Joe Rice, 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie, One Team, One Dream. On that note, you know, let's keep it real. With that, you know, hey, like Jason Knight said, Artem, you're going to have to beat him on his own home turf. With that, I'm going to take us out with some Swamp, who actually happens to be from the southern area down there by Mississippi. So we're going to end the show on that note. Have a good night, and God bless.
Where I come from, people always get money. Turn to Puerto Rican Friday, all the way to Sunday. Got the cooler in the back, find the party, call your buddy. You know it's going down, cause we turn on like no other. I said, where I come from, people always get money. Turn to Puerto Rican Friday, all the way to Sunday. Got the cooler in the back, find the party, call your buddy. You know it's going down, cause we turn on like no other. Right around town with the radio.
Grab a chain in case we're getting stuck, we roll. Never ride low.